So good morning, everyone. For those who are new, this is a little different this morning. Usually we have sitting and walking, and then we have a Dharma talk. But this morning we have a transmission ceremony that'll probably begin around 11:15 or so. That's what I want to talk about. A transmission ceremony is different than a recitation. A recitation is we're just reciting something. But in a transmission, it's something that's being transmitted to someone. And what is being transmitted to some people this morning are the three refuges. And I'll say more about that in the five mindfulness trainings or precepts. And these are very important for someone who wants to follow the Buddha's path. Again, traditionally, Buddhism, there was no such thing as Buddhism. These are kind of our words. The Buddha taught a path of awakening. He taught the Dharma, this body of teachings and practices that facilitate awakening, wisdom, understanding, compassion. So he really taught a path of how to transition in one's life from living, quote-unquote, an unenlightened life, a life that is based on self, a life that is based on the kind of ignorance of how things really are, kind of very fundamental misperceptions about life. And so it ends with becoming a Buddha, an enlightened one, someone who is no longer living from self, no longer ensnared in the world of duality or separation or disconnection, and whose heart and mind is simply always a source of unimpeded wisdom and compassion. So that is the path he taught. But he taught it in a very practical and systematic way, so there could never be any doubt or need for hesitation by anyone who really sought a path of transformation. And again, transformation is very much what the Buddhist path is about. It's not an incremental, where one becomes a better self simply, a more peaceful self, but one starts out, so to speak, as a larvae, as a worm, and one ends up a beautiful butterfly. And the truth is, there is no butterfly without the larvae, the caterpillar. They are the same, but they have transformed. One has transformed into the other. And when one follows the Buddha's path, one has the potential to begin as an ordinary, ignorant, suffering, deluded human being, the caterpillar. I mean, the caterpillar lives for what? Just loves to spend its day just chewing on green stuff, and really that's what its whole life is about. They're very similar to ours. A butterfly is hopefully different. I don't know about the mindset of a butterfly, but it certainly looks better. And we know a caterpillar is can't move very fast and is sort of stationary in life. A butterfly is much freer to move about this world. Going back to the time 2,600 years ago when the Buddha was alive, following his great enlightenment, when he not only went through this process of transformation within his own body-mind, but also really came to see very clearly the human situation and saw very clearly how to help people get out of it, transform. And so for 49, 50 years, he spent his life helping people follow a different path in life, a more enlightened way of living. He was very charismatic because his understanding was not just intellectual, it was transformative. It was as if we could imagine in the world of caterpillars, if all of a sudden some caterpillar you had known showed up one day as a butterfly, you might be quite struck by that. And the sense we get historically is that, as the Buddha taught for many years, not only was his teaching very clear, but his being was very wonderful. And in those days, there were probably less attachments in certain ways. So there were many people who just wanted to follow him. He was wandering about India. He wasn't broadcasting over the internet or podcasting or anything. He was actually just walking about. That's how they did it in those days. So people would have living encounters. He'd show up in your village and he would give a talk, and people, you know, he'd be out there, people would come to him, and many people were moved by him, but some people just wanted to kind of follow him. They wanted to spend their life with him. So it became a kind of a situation where people would say, "We want to be your followers. How do we become your followers?" In a kind of more formal way. And so this transmission of the refuges and the precepts / five mindfulness trainings goes back to that. Okay, it's very ancient. It is the way everyone has entered the path of the Buddha's way. And one might say, well, I mean, what, do I have to go through this ceremony to follow the Buddha's way? No, you don't. But many do. Now, why do they do it? It's the same way people get married and have a ceremony. There is something about a ceremony or ritual when it's meaningful that is kind of makes a more indelible impression upon the mind than just kind of sitting around and saying something. Right? And anybody we know in life, whether it's such a thing as a wedding, such a thing as a funeral, you know, memorial service. Many of us were there yesterday for Gary's memorial service. It is a way where we stop our ordinary way and we, in a ritualized, meaningful way, acknowledge something significant has happened. Last night it was somebody dearly loved by many has died, is no longer with us. Again, graduation. I mean, there are birthday celebrations. We know as human beings, we bring a certain ceremonial basis to significant events. For those going to refuge and taking the trainings, this is a significant event, as you will see in the ceremony. Because one is... And again, let me just say, beside the meaning of participating in a ritual, the other thing about a ceremony is it is public. Right? Many people don't like to be held responsible. Right? So we like to kind of make our commitments privately. Right? So if we don't keep them, well... Who knows if I really ever said that? You know, did I say that? Did I commit to that? You know how we do it. So, you know, when you stand up before people, right? When you make your commitments before your friends and your family, it is more significant because you are saying to those assembled, I am serious about this and I'm willing to stand up in front of everyone and say, this is, this is my commitment. Is that clear? So I think you all know that. So that is a reason why traditionally this transmitting of the refuges and the precepts or training are done in this way. And again, please understand, it is a transmission that goes back to the Buddha. The original transmitter of the refuges and the trainings was the Buddha, right? A living person. And he transmitted it to living people, and he empowered those people to transmit to others, right? So please understand that this is a living transmission. It has never been broken, right? The refuges and the trainings that I will be transmitting today were transmitted to me by my teachers, especially Thich Nhat Hanh, right? And they were transmitted to him by his teacher, who was transmitted to them by, you know, see, it goes all the way back, unbroken, to the Buddha. So this is a transmission of something that has been alive in human history for 2,600 years, generation after generation after generation. So those of you who are receiving transmission today, please understand that this is a connection with a certain kind of energy that goes back to the Buddha, the historical Buddha. But even more importantly, it goes back to the Buddha's mind, the Buddha's wisdom, the Buddha's compassion. So let me just say something about what will be transmitted today. The first thing we'll transmit are what are called the three refuges, sometimes called the three jewels, right? A jewel is something, it's a stone, right? And there are many stones in this world, but a jewel is considered what? A precious stone. It has more value than ordinary stones and pebbles. Right? Many, 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 many stones and pebbles and rocks and minerals. But for some reason, human beings say a jewel is more precious than, right? So the three jewels, they're called, something very precious in the human experience about these. They're also, as they call, the three refuges. A refuge is an interesting word, right? A refuge is what? A refuge is a safe place, right? It's a safe place. It's a place that we can always feel good in. It's a place where we can always nourish ourselves. It's a refuge. People talk this way. What do we need refuge from? Right? Why these three refuges? We are taking refuge from the storms of worldly life. We are taking refuge from the ups and downs of endless emotionality. We are taking refuge from behaviors, words, thoughts, feelings that do harm and that create suffering for ourselves and others, right? We are taking refuge from our own thinking mind that can't get us out of our problems. We've tried this, we've tried that, we've tried to think our way, fix our way, and no matter how many different things we have tried, it always seems that we stay stuck. So we want to come out of the world of suffering, come out of the world of unenlightenment, come out of the world of self, which is so all-encompassing, the world of self, of me and mine. the world of separation, the world of disconnection, the world of aloneness and loneliness. Right? We need a refuge. Is that clear? The three jewels are that refuge for all human beings who want to take advantage of it. Now, why is it a refuge? Because the three jewels are the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. Okay, now let me say a few words about the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The Buddha has an historical sense. It's acknowledging that there was an enlightened human being, an ordinary human being, who looked deeply into life, who looked deeply into his own mind, and resolved all issues, all problems, and actually fully experienced the fundamental open goodness of the human mind, and was able to live it and to teach that, and has that transmission of enlightened awareness and enlightened living has been transmitted through living people up to this present day. Okay. So one takes refuge in that historical transmission, but one also takes refuge in that awakened mind, that Buddha mind, which truly means that one takes refuge in the awareness that one has that capacity to be awake. I take refuge in my own. I take refuge in the Buddha, and I take refuge in my own Buddha mind, and I take refuge in that potential within myself to be awake. Let's take refuge in the Buddha. Take refuge in the Dharma is this acknowledgement that there is this whole body of teaching, of wisdom, of knowing, of practice, right? That has been cultivated, experimented with for over 2,600 years. And that has been shown to be replicable generation after generation after generation. People have been liberating themselves from suffering and waking up to their true nature in every culture where Buddhism has come for 2,600 years. And that's just the truth. That is the Dharma. Okay? It is a peerless jewel of human experience that we now have an opportunity to be exposed to learn about, and to practice. Right. So, we have the Buddha. In a certain sense, Buddha as teacher, as guide. We haven't been able to do it on our own. Even though we may be smart, even though we've read the books, even though we've listened to endless talks, even though we've gone, you know, here and there, we have not been able to do it on our own. We need a teacher. We need a guide. We need mentors. Right? Dharma is the guidebook, the manual. It's the how to do it. Dharma. And the third jewel is Sangha. Sangha is the community of practitioners. We cannot do this alone. We cannot do this without friends, supporters, people to practice with. As well as we want to create, we're not just doing this for ourselves. We are not solitary practitioners. We are not selfish. We want to do this with others because everybody else is in the same situation I am in. We want to create an enlightened world. How do we create an enlightened world? By creating an enlightened community. How do we create an enlightened community? By developing enlightened people. That is the Sangha. like the community of people who practice together the Buddha and the Dharma. So these three jewels are the refuge. Right? Many people in this life, life has been a storm. People are just blown about by the ups and downs of life, the comings and goings of life, the gains and losses of life, the happinesses and the miseries of life. People are just blown about, as well as blown about by their own mind and their own conditioning. We need a refuge. We need a safe place where this transformation, this healing and transformation can occur. So it is within the context of the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha that this can occur for anyone who wants to access it. Is that clear? I mean, that's what it means. Now, somebody may be going, I mean, is this the only way? And you know what I would say? I don't know. I hope not. I hope there are many other paths out there that help people heal and transform and wake up. Right? The world needs all the help it can get. I would hope there are many paths. But all I could say is, this is the path that I know. But that's all. This is the path that I know, and it is a true path. It may not be for everyone. That's fine, too. So we take refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. And then there are these five precepts that Thich Nhat Hanh has called five mindfulness trainings. They're really the same thing. But what he has taken as kind of precepts, he's really acknowledged that they are ways of living that need to be trained in. It's not like, you know, just do and do not, but it's a process of training in something that one understands more and more over time, right? As well as one can only practice them if one is mindful. When one is mindful to life, one understands why these do's and do nots are so essential, right? And these precepts or trainings are about, you know, it's like, all right, I've taken refuge in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. I have committed myself to cultivating an awakened life, a meditative life, a mindful life. You know, what's the first thing I got to do? Okay? I have to stop creating bad karma. You know? Why is my mind, you know, many people, why is my mind agitated? Why can't it settle down? Why are there still so much suffering and pain in my life? For many people, it's because they are not in any way restricting the activities of their body and their speech. In time, the mind will be transformed. But the simplest thing, right? You know, like this is just simple behaviorism. You know, I can immediately change my behavior. Right? I can just stop doing things that are causing harm to myself and other beings. I can stop saying things that cause harm to myself and other beings. In here, it still may be a mess, right? But I can keep my mouth shut, right? I don't have to spread my toxicity among other people. And by knowing that I have the capacity right from the beginning to do that, right, there's a nobility in that. Right? And knowing that one has really made a commitment to stop doing harm to oneself and to others. The Buddha's first teaching was what's called ahimsa. It's often translated as not violence, but it really meant no harm. Right? No harm to myself, no harm to others, no harm to animals, no harms to the earth. Stop doing harm. Okay. So now today, for those of you I'm doing something a little different. What I'll be transmitting in the trainings are earlier versions from Thich Nhat Hanh. What has happened within his community, Plum Village community, is over the years, they keep getting kind of revised. And there's a reason for that. It's a kind of developmental thing. And there's been different people inputting. So these trainings, which started out very simple when Thich Nhat Hanh first started transmitting them 20 or 30 years ago, have become quite elaborated. They went from two or three sentences to small paragraphs to larger paragraphs of all meaningful things. But the problem I've always had with this development is it is almost impossible in a ceremonial way to people to hold on to the essential meaning of what's being transmitted, which to me is most important in a ceremony, right? So, the way I look at that is, today I'll be transmitting the pith of it, of what Thich Nhat Hanh developed. And these more elaborated, we might say, are the sort of, traditionally in Buddhism, there is teaching and there's commentary. Teachings are not always clear, you know, what they mean or how to practice them. The commentary kind of explains it, right? This is how you do it. Is that clear? It's sort of like there's the recipe, and then below it is kind of how to do it. You know what I'm saying? You look at the recipe of all the ingredients, you may not know what to do. But underneath, it'll kind of tell you, first you do this, and then you cut that, and then you add that. All right? So I am transmitting the pith of these five. But please understand, I am not. I am also encouraging, and even on the certificate that's being given to the people ordained, is the longer elaboration, which are telling us, really in a more elaborated way, how to practice each of these five. Is that clear? But for ceremonial purposes, I think these shorter versions are. And again, what you. What you are getting in these trainings is nothing new. They are the basic kind of, in Buddhism it's called right action, but it may be familiar to everybody in terms of morality or ethics, right? Such as do not kill, protect all life. Do not steal, do not take the things of others. Right. Do not engage in improper sexuality, which means sexuality that causes harm to oneself or another. Do not use alcohol or intoxicants in a way that causes harm to oneself or another. And do not speak in ways that cause harm to oneself and another. So these are, I mean, if you think of very fundamental ways we are in the world, it's funny, Thich Nhat Hanh wrote a book just about these five trainings. He called it For a Future to be Possible. It was sort of like, if people just followed these five, forget about, you know, these other voluminous teachings and practices. If everybody in the human race just followed these five, which again are in all, I think, ethical and religious, what a different world it would be, right? If every human being really wanted to protect life and to cherish life and gave up killing each other, killing animals, what a different world it would be. If people didn't want to take others, exploit other people for their own benefit, the world, natural resources, right? Which is a kind of stealing what's not yours, right? Why do we have these ecological issues? Because we think the earth is ours to steal, right? So you can see, you know, so much harm is pain is caused by words. Not only in individual relationships, how people harm, but look at politics. I mean, what goes on in the world? The way people talk to one another. The way people use words to lie, to cover over, to deceive. You know, it's if people understood the enlightened activity of words, but what a different world. Drugs, alcohol, the misuse of sexuality. I mean, it's rampant, isn't it? We know it in our own poor society. Sexuality has become such a source of suffering for so many people, the way it is used and abused. You know, drug addiction, both to alcoholism and illegal drugs, so-called illegal drugs, until they become legal, and then but even more prescription drugs. I mean, it's the addiction and the abuse of what's going on in our society and the world is horrific. So you can see, just with these five trainees, right? If people more and more just practice these, what a wonderful world it would be, you know, as a basis. So so again, this formula of the five trainings is very important, something that everyone who begins a path can begin. And it really says, from now on, I am going to attend to the actions of my body, speech, and mind. I understand that the actions of my body, speech, and mind have effects. So I am going to be careful. You see, have care. I'm going to care for my body. I'm going to care for my mouth and the words it speaks. And I'm going to care for my mind from now on and make sure to do my best that I am not cultivating harm to any being from now on. So, again, that's even before one has crossed one's legs, learned about mindfulness or meditation or anything. Right? That's where one begins. So, have a few moments before we take our quick break. Maybe about a minute or two. Any questions? Anything that's not clear? Or please feel free. This is not a class in catechism. Anything that's not clear about the three refuges or the five trainings? Yeah, they are pretty